If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
But you know, basically, I grew up in the wine business. Like it or not, that's how I grew up.
First of all, consider that to can say that a grape variety is doing well in a specific vineyard, you need a generation minimum. Yeah.
I've had some great experiences. That's the fun part. You get to find these things. And you don't always have to drink a $50 bottle. You can find a great $12 bottle that's like, wow, that's amazing.
A lot of people think that you just grow the grapes, pick them, throw it in a tank and stomp on the grapes and hey presto, you've got wine. If it were only that simple, It's not.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 449. This week we feature Amanda Whitstrom Higgins, Executive Vice President of Ancient Peaks Winery in Paso Robles. For its young age as a state, California has a deep history and culture reflecting the Old West everywhere you go. Ancient Peaks Winery has a long history of its own and has been growing a surprising variety of wine grapes on the property. We caught up with Executive Vice President Amanda Whitstrom Higgins recently to learn about the Paso Robles area and the many treasures you can find, especially in a wine glass. You can hear Amanda on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term freshness. Today we welcome Amanda Whitstrom Higgins of Ancient Peaks Winery in Santa Margarita, California, to the podcast. Amanda, how you doing?
I'm great, Ray. Great to see you.
Yeah,
or hear you.
Yeah, good to see you as well. I wish we could see each other, and hopefully that's not too far away. But right now, it is what it is. So you're in Santa Margarita, but basically you're kind of near Paso Robles, right?
Absolutely. So we're actually the southernmost vineyard within the Paso Robles Appellation in a sub-AVA called the Santa Margarita Ranch.
Great. I've had so many people debate this. Is it Paso Robles or Paso Robles?
Well, you're not the first person to ask. If you're from here, and I'm fourth generation, it's Paso Robles. But if you'd like to pay tribute to our Hispanic heritage, it's Paso Robles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's a much more fancier way to put it. But it is kind of cool.
We're simple folks around here, so it's Paso Robles to most of us.
And, you know, when you say you're simple folks, I mean, you are farmers, and the fact that you have been doing this for so long, your family, that's really something to look back on with a great deal of pride.
Absolutely. I'm fourth generation in the Paso Robles region, and my grandfather was actually first generation, and it's pretty amazing to see the transformation of this little community, and it's because of agriculture, and predominantly in the last 10 years, because of the wine industry. The appellation was created in 1983, just a year after I was born, and at that point, I think there was just a couple of producers making wine, and I don't think it was very good back in those days, but you know, certainly some wonderful talent has come to the region, and the people who live and work here every day have been exposed to some really amazing wines, as well as science, to prove that this region is really top-notch for making incredible wines because of a number of reasons. One is the tortured geology that California experiences. So
sure.
Within the region, we've got a number of different soil profiles. I think there's over like 30 soil profiles just because of all of the tectonic activity that we've got in California. And then we've got this diurnal temperature swing, which is the difference between day and nighttime temperatures, which is perfectly situated for helping grapes achieve maximum phenolic ripeness because they need that change in temperatures so to slow down the ripening process to actually make the fruit more complex. So it's kind of like all the stars aligned for us in this region, and I just feel so blessed to be able to tell the story of not only our vineyard and our ranch, but the entire community.
Yeah, it's very neat, and the history is amazing. And you are a ranch. You are a working ranch. You sent us a selfie, which I appreciate, which was you with a couple of horses. And what else do you have there on the property?
Well, so we have the ranch itself is about 14,000 acres, and it's one of the oldest continuously operated cattle ranches in the state of California. And we run an Angus beef mother cow herd, which my husband's a cattle rancher. I grew up raising cattle. So we've got cattle on the property. We've got vineyards. We've got a few acres of pistachios, which we've yet to see a crop off of. But it's, you know, these guys, you love growing things. So we grow hay every other year or so. And we've got a nursery that we propagate our own vines. And so, yeah, we're definitely busy all the time.
Nice, and very self-contained in some ways. Well, what we need to do is talk about wine, and you're making your fair share of some interesting wines. And I was able to taste a few, and I am very impressed with what you're doing there. That's the thing. You just want to get the word out to people that there's so many areas growing great wines. Let's talk about the wines that you are making right now.
Absolutely. So we make an array of different varietals. We've got 19 different varietals planted in our vineyard, but what's the predominant varietal in the Pastoral Bulls region, as well as in our own property, is Cabernet Sauvignon, and really the Bordeaux varietal. So Cabernet, we make a few different Cabernet Sauvignon, some that you can find at extremely reasonable prices, and I know that that's something that's important to your listeners, is, you know, finding wines that you can drink every day that don't make you feel bad about opening them. And that's really our philosophy as well. So Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, we do have Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Zinfandel, and then we make a few blends that are available in national distribution. In our direct-to-consumer program, we do all sorts of fun and exciting things, you know, kind of really small lot versions of just about everything that we produce in the vineyard, which makes it pretty exciting.
And best of all, they're tasty. Yeah, people are always looking for different areas. But also, I have to tell you that I never feel bad about opening a bottle, just so I can get that out. Interesting bit of history I was reading about is that you're along the Camino Real trail. Is that right?
Yeah. So way back when the El Camino Real ran right through the property, actually. And if you're in just the right spot, you can actually see the cutout from that old path. But where we are is a really historic location. It's the ranch has got one of the oldest stone and mortar buildings in the state of California. It's called a Asistencia. And the Asistencia is a mission outpost. So it's, you know, one day's walk was typically the distance between one mission to another. But because of the large mountain range, the Santa Lucia mountain range that runs along the coastline, they built this Asistencia, which is this mission outpost. It's a location where the travelers could rest their horses and fill up their food bags. And so it came really close to becoming a mission, but didn't make it at the end of the day. But it's a beautiful historic building. And the reason that they chose this location was because of the abundance of food and wildlife. And it sits right on a beautiful stream, which way back when contained a lot of steelhead, and there's a really high water table in some areas of the ranch, and so it was great for growing grapes and an abundance of acorns. And that we've got, you know, stone and mortar rocks all over where they were grinding the acorns to make mush. Of course, that was the Native Americans who were soon, you know, recruited to help with this with developing this mission outpost, but it's an amazing property, really rich in history when you think about California, which doesn't have much, you know, isn't the pedigree of history in America isn't as rich as in a lot of other places, but we're certainly blessed to have it.
Sure, but, you know, it's interesting because for those who've been to California, and this could be any part of California, that there is the history that was so unique, the western part of our country, and California is very western. I mean, you guys are very western. And that's something I think a lot of people go out there for the first time really don't expect that, don't really see that at first.
Well, and what's also interesting about the location and that we're in is it's very rural. We're halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco and only about 14 miles from the Pacific Ocean. But when you come to our ranch, it's like taking a step back in time. I mean, we ride horses and chase cattle around for fun. It's not what you would typically think of California coastline, you know. And so it's really, I'm so proud of the Paso Robles region because we've kept hold of that tradition, which in my mind makes this region so special. And really, we have the opportunity to share it with others and bring joy onto dinner tables throughout the country with sharing our wine that we make from this land. So there's really no better feeling than to be able to do what we're doing now and talking with you today and hopefully inspiring some of your listeners to pick up a bottle of wine from the region and maybe even come visit.
Absolutely. Well, visiting certainly one of the best parts. Now, is your role as executive vice president, I always ask people about their own experience getting into wine. Was it just something so natural to you, wine might be your future, or did you think about going a different direction as you were growing up?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was born and raised in the Paso Robles area and always loved agriculture. But when this community growing up, it was, I mean, very rural. It was, I mean, I remember when we got a movie theater downtown, and it wasn't really until the early 2000s that wine came onto the scene as a really strong player in industry for the region. And I remember when I left for college wanting to do something else, you know, because you're always raised in ag. And then really after I graduated was finding my heartbeat, which was, you know, really glorifying farmers and agriculture, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions and mystery around farmers, which are really important components of our world. They, you know, they feed everyone. So
right.
We purchased this particular ranch with our two partners in 2001. And so when the vineyard had just really been planted, and then in 2005, we wanted to tell the story of this place through our own label, and that's when we created Ancient Peaks. And to be honest, our families were new to the wine business. We weren't new to growing grapes, but we hadn't produced our own wine. And so it was just a wonderful opportunity to really start from the ground up. It seems like just yesterday, but it was close to 15 years ago when we started. And so I've just been so blessed to be on this journey and be able to see the AVA really grow and develop. And even today, you know, there's a lot happening within this region for redevelopment. You know, some of the vineyards are getting to be 20, 30 years old now, and it's time for redevelopment. And I think that the opportunity within the region is even going to be better to make world-class wines, because along with redevelopment comes, you know, more innovation with higher density, new clonal material, better site selections. And so this is just, I think, the tip of the iceberg. And so not only for the region, but for us as well, we're doing the same things. We're finding the best spots on our ranch with 15 years of history of farming. We've got a much better idea of where the prime locations are. And so we're focusing our energies differently. We're focusing on Cabernet, as I mentioned, first and foremost, because it's just a beautiful wine from this vineyard in particular. So it happened by accident, but I couldn't be more blessed. And I think that, you know, everything kind of happens for a reason. And so I can't see myself doing anything else, that's for sure.
Sure. Well, good for you. It's a fun thing to do. I think it's interesting, though, going from being growers to being winemakers. As I've said 100 times, the actual plan of opening a winery and making wine is a little bit crazy. Obviously, lots of money, lots of planning going into this. Was that a scary step, or did that just seem to be a very natural thing?
Well, it certainly was a little bit scary, but you know, there in this business, if you really want to, and for us, telling the story of this place was really important. We're not production farmers, so to speak. So telling the story of this vineyard was really, really important to us. And the best way that we can do it is make wine from the fruit ourselves. and partner with great producers who are like-minded that are willing to advocate for this vineyard. And so it was a natural step. It was really, it was very necessary given our big picture and our long-range plans. But it certainly, we started, 05 was our first vintage, but we really got going in 07, 08. And you've been around that long, and that was a very interesting time to launch a new business at a pretty high level, just because it was one of the, you know, the biggest recessions that we've seen in our country's history. And so at that time, there was a lot of supply in the marketplace from a bulk wine and a grape perspective. And so that part was really scary. But I got to tell you that the owners of our company, our family, I'm so proud of how hard we worked and how true to our mission that we've stayed, because those were difficult times. And it just really, the American dream is so, so relevant that if you put your mind to something, you know, you can really achieve anything. And that's proof of it. You're sure there's a lot of people with big pocketbooks in this industry, but nothing takes the place of heart and drive and a unique story in a special place. So, but I think the guys might have a few gray hairs because of it.
Oh yeah, I can understand that. Well, it's a hardworking industry, and of course, the number one thing you're working with and against is Mother Nature. Obviously, California's been suffering a drought, and I'm sure it's had some, and a drought that's gone on for, what are they saying, close to 20 years right now. But also, the threat of fire is very real there.
Knock on wood, we have not experienced the fires that have been so devastating to many of our neighboring regions. Napa Valley is 5 to 6 hours away from us, and our heart breaks for the producers up there because they've pushed, you know, Napa and Sonoma have just really been hit hard the last few years. I don't think there's any wildfires happening right now, which is a wonderful thing. But yeah, drought is, you know, we're always trying to work harder to utilize less of our natural resources as possible. And so as terrible as the drought has been, I think it's really forced us as a community to come together to bring solutions. You know, for us, we've added a number of different elements to the vineyard to try and save the water that we at one time used because we hadn't developed proper technology. So right now we're using a lot of fans that displace cold air and warm and force warm air down into the fruiting zone during frost season, which has been really wonderful and a tremendous advantage for a number of reasons, because you're not pushing back your ripening process by putting too much water. So there are good things that come from bad times. We are, of course, praying for rain all the time. But we're getting through it as a community, and a lot of people have come together and been vocal, and solutions are being put in place so that we can preserve our natural resources to our best ability.
That's great. How many cases are you making at Ancient Peaks?
Any given year, it changes a little bit. The last vintage, we made 60,000 cases, and we're distributed nationwide. We've got a big vineyard, so we've got just under 1,000 acres planted. And our goal is to make extremely affordable wines that over-deliver for the price point, which means, you know, we've got to make a few more bottles.
Yeah, well, keep doing it because I like your wine. So for your role, do you ever have the opportunity to spend time in the tasting room? Or I don't know if you, I assume you do your fair share of events.
Yeah, that's a big part of what I do, is communicating the story within our staff and our vision as a company, within the staff and customers. And so I'm really blessed to be able to spend time on the front lines with people who come and visit Paso Robles, do a lot of tours, as well as out in the marketplace. And then working with, you know, it's kind of a little bit of everything, working with our team at the production facility and out in the vineyard to make sure that we're on track with everything our long-term vision is pointing us towards.
Okay. What I'm kind of getting at here is, when you're talking to people, you know, I'm sure you get one of everybody. You get the experienced wine taster. You get the people who think they know a lot more than what they maybe do. You get the people, though, that are really intimidated by tasting rooms, which they shouldn't be because they are warm and friendly places. How do you describe smells to people? How do you get them to sort of understand what they might want to look for without exactly planting anything in their head?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, there's a great aroma kit that I actually just bought a couple of weeks ago to help with the identification aromatics, and it can be tricky. And I love what I think you're getting at is wine shouldn't be confusing or intimidating. You know, just closing your eyes and sticking your nose into the glass and really just picking up what you can. There's, of course, kind of routine or expected aromatics for certain varietals, but usually saying less is the best way to get people to become more engaged, because the power of suggestion is so real that
right.
Oftentimes when you can set an environment that isn't intimidating, people are some of our least experienced tasting room staff or customers come up with great descriptors. It's really amazing if you just take away that intimidation factor.
Right. The end is this is supposed to be fun and best of all, something you can do socially. So over the last 10 years, well, the wine industry is constantly changing, but over the last 10 years, you've seen much more in the way of different packaging, cans, boxes, bags, all kinds of different things. Do you see yourselves going that way? Do you already? And how do you see that in the future?
Well, I think for us, we're a traditional family. We're a traditional producer. We certainly look at what's happening in the marketplace, but you know, our wines are meant to be enjoyed right away, but they also have the ability to age. And I still think that finishing with cork and in a glass bottle is the way that we prefer to go. But what I do love is how the change in this industry has made wine more accessible to a lot of people who might not choose this as a beverage because it wasn't single serve. So I think it's really a neat evolution that creates a more dynamic industry. We just personally haven't chosen to move in that direction because of our long-term goals and vision.
Sure. And there has to be different people doing different things. That's what kind of drives the industry. So this is a question that can go positive or negative. Take your pick or both.
Okay.
What makes you crazy about the wine business?
What drives me crazy?
What makes you crazy, drives you crazy, either way.
Okay. What makes me crazy in love with it? I'll go that way. You know, the one thing that makes me absolutely love this industry is the people behind it and place. It's history, it's geography, it's geology, it's art, it's science, it's all wrapped up in one. There's no right answers. You know, what other thing can you do that there is no right answers? And you can have a spirited discussion with anyone surrounding a single topic that there is absolutely no right answer, if in my opinion. So I just think that this is such a beautiful industry, and every year it changes, and there's so much inspiration from France and producers from Argentina, Australia. I mean, even within California and the New World, it's incredible that it's provided me and this little community that I live in a world of opportunity. And for that, I will be absolutely forever grateful. And that makes me crazy in love with the wine industry.
That's a good answer. Now, one of the more difficult things in the industry these days has been labor. Labor right now in general, obviously, is a big problem coming out of or wherever we're at in the pandemic. But how is the labor force in your part of California? Are you able to find the people you need, or is it just kind of a struggle?
Well, one of the things that I've certainly been hearing that from all of my friends, you know, all around the country, that labor is a big issue. People first is a really important thing to me personally and to our company. And from the beginning, we've been really blessed because community is so important to us. So many of our key staff have been with us you know, 5, 10, 15 years. And I think that that's a tribute to the culture that we have and the principles that we have as an organization. So if you're a good company that treats people right, I think you've got a much easier chance of making sure that your labor needs are taken care of. One of the things that I'm so proud of that we started at our company that I spearheaded back in 2014 was partnering with our Cal Poly University, which is our local university that specializes in viticulture. And we created a multi-divisional internship program. And so we work really closely with the college. And this multi-divisional internship program gives a select few within, mostly from Cal Poly, a chance to experience the wine industry at a number of different levels, whether that's direct-to-consumer, distribution, events, accounting, production, viticulture. So that's been a really neat program. And I think that that particular program, in addition to the work we do in our community and, of course, the review of our current employees, has really given us an opportunity to recruit extremely talented people, and our retention rates are really high. But I will say that it feels like there's a lot of people who have left the workforce, and it's certainly making it challenging for a number of our vendors, a number of the restaurants and hotels
sure. In
this community. So, yeah, we're hoping that we can get people back to work sometime soon.
Well, it's great what you're doing, because obviously you're, in your own way, you're farming the community, being able to find people who would take an interest in the industry. So I commend you for that. That's excellent. You're the founder of, and I'm going to see if I got this right, Dream Big Darling. Is that right?
That's correct.
And tell me about that, if you would, please.
So Dream Big Darling is a really amazing organization that I founded along with a few of my industry peers in 2018. And it's all about developing the next generation of leaders in the wine and spirits industry through mentorship and education. The name is a tribute to my grandmother, who was a huge inspiration in my life, and she always called me darling. In fact, she called everyone darling. But she wasn't a wealthy person, and she, you know, certainly didn't have a long, you know, and rich list of professional accomplishments, but she always treated people with kindness and love, and truly the world was a better place because she was in it. And so I think that if we can teach people to dream bigger and achieve whatever professional goals, personal goals that they have, but to leave the world and treat others with kindness, we're certainly going to be in a better place. And so that's what Dream Big Darling is all about.
Good for you and good for her. Nice way for her to be remembered. So my favorite question to ask winemakers, we always kind of do this towards the back end of the interview, is I'm sure you've done plenty of media, plenty of interviews. What is the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you. What do you want your legacy to be?
And what would you like your legacy to be?
Well, I think that continuing to create and cultivate opportunity for our community and this industry, and then, of course, raising beautiful little humans who make the world a better place is extremely important to me. And continuing the spirit of agriculture and sharing it with as many people as I can is something that that drives me, that's what I want my legacy to be.
That's very good. See, it's a trick question because I get you to kind of ask your own question.
Yep, I love it.
For our listeners who would like to learn a bit more about you, you have a tasting room, but if people would like to find out about you online, what is your website?
AncientPeaks.com, or you can check us out on Instagram, and that's just Ancient Peaks, and or Dream Big Darling is dreambigdarling.org.
And are you by appointment, or can people wander on in? How is that working these days?
You know, it's best to get an appointment, just because of what's happening in the world right now. We highly recommend appointments. However, we're happy to see to you if you walk up and don't have one if we've got room.
Excellent. Very good. Amanda, this has been a lot of fun talking to you. I would love to see your property one day, and hopefully I'll get back on an airplane before the next appearance of Haley's Comet. But thank you very much for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for all that you do for the wine industry as a whole, and really appreciate you taking the time to visit with me.
Learn more by visiting ancientpeaks.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2021.